Chapter 5. Yannig Runs a Security Check. There wasn't much evidence on which to base his reaction, Rick had to admit. But when he reacted, he just reacted, and that's all there was to it. Call it a hunch, or call it nonsense. That's how it was, and he couldn't change it. The barber had practically refused him a dry hair treatment, and his hair was rather dry. The same barber had tried to sell a treatment to Hartson Brandt, whose hair was not dry at all. And the elevator boy, who had carried the scientist down from the fourth floor, had winked at the barber. Even admitting that it added up to no evidence of anything, it bothered him. He had asked Tom Dodd how much Yannig knew about the barber. Tom admitted that Yannig didn't know much. After all, he pointed out, it was impossible to check everyone in an office building of that size, or at least impractical. Furthermore, it was a cover operation, and any kind of careful check on people in the building would warn them that something was going on. Tom agreed, however, that it was better to be safe than sorry. Yannig would run a check on the barber, even though Rick's evidence was no evidence at all. Rick wasn't satisfied. He felt he had to talk it over with Steve Ames and call the agent, who was in Yannig's New York office, as soon as he got home. There was a small switch box next to the telephone in the library. It had only two positions. One was marked normal, and the other was not marked at all. Steve asked, "Who is it?" "Rick Brandt. Throw your switch." Rick did so with no apparent results. "Nothing happened," he said.
"Nothing audible," Steve corrected. "I threw mine at the same time. We're scrambled now. Go ahead, Rick. What is it?"
Rick told him the story. Steve didn't laugh. He had had experience with Rick's hunches before.
"All right. I've already talked with Tom Dodd. He told me the story, and I agree we should run a check."
He also reported that Weiss had persuaded Marks to come to Spindrift so the team could work together. "I have Dodd planning how to get him out of Washington."
"Tom told me why no check had been run on the people in the building," Rick said hesitantly.
"Honestly, Steve, I thought you always check on everyone who might have a connection with a case."
"We do," Steve said flatly. "But we can't check on everyone in the city of Washington. Consider this, Rick. There are several hundred people that work in that building, and perhaps as many more who go there regularly for perfectly legitimate reasons. We couldn't run a deep check on all of them, and a superficial check wouldn't mean anything. So we don't check. Instead, we make sure we know about all the people the scientists see regularly, and we give physical protection not only to the scientists, but to the floor they work on. We keep a careful check to be sure our phones aren't tapped, and there's a scrambler on each line. Of course, the moment we get even a slight odor of fish, we run a check. That's why we're working on your barber right now. We're also checking on the elevator operator."
"Okay. Sorry. I guess I was off base."
"Not at all. I'd be disappointed if he didn't ask for explanations."
There was one other question in Rick's mind.
"How do you know we weren't followed back to Spindrift?"
Steve chuckled.
"You had two cars on your tail. They have picked up anyone who tried to follow Tom. What's more, our men at the airport identified every plane that took off from the vicinity of Washington for 2 hours after your departure."
Rick said sheepishly,
"Oh, sorry, Steve."
"Forget it. I'll be in touch with you, Rick."
Steve was right, of course. Yannig was on the job and would plug any loose holes. And once Marks arrived, Spindrift would be the only base the Yannig men had to cover. That would make it simpler. Rick decided he may as well put the matter out of his mind. Barbie, Jan, and Scotty were waiting for him on the front porch. Scotty asked,
"So what gives?"
"Steve says to forget it." Jan frowned, her pretty face worried.
"Barbie told me about those odd hunches you get sometimes. Are they ever wrong?"
Rick grinned. "I'll say they are. Don't worry, Jan. You're safe here." Her dark eyes flashed at him.
"I'm not worried about myself. I'm worried about my father, Rick."
Rick apologized.
I didn't mean that quite the way it sounded, but don't forget, Jan, our father is in this too. So we'll worry with you, if there's any worrying to be done. Barbie changed the subject.
It's still early. Why don't we give Jan another swimming lesson?
They had started the day before teaching Jan how to use the underwater breathing apparatus. She was an excellent swimmer, almost as good as Barbie, but she had never had experience with mask, fins, and snorkel, so lessons in the use of those were required before she could graduate to the aqualungs.
Let's go, Rick said.
In a short time, the four had changed to swimming suits and were testing the water off Pirate's Beach. Since it was the coast of New Jersey, it was cold, but not unbearable. Once they were accustomed to it, Rick picked up the instructions where he had left off the day before. Jan used Barbie's mask, snorkel, and fins. They would get her some of her own on the next trip to Whiteside. Barbie had borrowed her father's equipment. The mask wasn't a perfect fit, but she was experienced enough not to mind a little leakage. The snorkel was all right, since no fit was involved, but the fins were ludicrous on her small feet. She had stuffed cotton into the toes to make them tight enough to wear, but that made the fins hard to control.
"Follow the leader," Rick called. "I'll lead. Jan next, Scotty next, and Barbie can bring up the rear."
That was so Scotty could be instantly aware of any trouble that Jan got into. Barbie could swim as well as either of the boys and needed no watching. Rick started by going straight out, watching the bottom through his mask. When he got to about the 15-foot depth, he bent at the waist and threw his legs upward. He slid smoothly into the water, rolling onto his back to watch Jan. She imitated his movements perfectly, and he turned back satisfied. She was graceful as a seal in the water. It wouldn't take much to make a first-class diver out of her. Rick went to the bottom and moved along, doing underwater acrobatics and touching a rock here and there. Then he turned over onto his back again and started upward, eyes on Jan. She followed. He led the way back to the beach. As the group emerged from the water and lifted their masks, Rick looked at Scotty. His pal nodded.
"She'll do. She followed you like a shadow."
"Good. All right, Jan. Next step is clearing your mask of water. The principle is easy. Just remember that gas is lighter than liquid. Your breath is lighter than the water, so you hold the top of your mask and blow it full of air, which forces the water out the bottom. Watch." He demonstrated a few times, then Jan tried. She caught on easily. The instruction continued until at the end of 2 hours, Rick took all of Jan's equipment and threw it into 12 feet of water. "Now," he said calmly, "go after it and put it on in the water. Clear your mask and snorkel, then come back to shore with full gear on and operating. No surfacing to take a breath. Use only the snorkel." Jan looked into the water thoughtfully. The moments ticked by. Finally, Rick asked, "Is there a problem?" The girl smiled.
"No, I'm planning how I'll do it. If I don't plan in advance, it will be too late after I've started. And I intend to do it correctly the first time."
Rick, Barbie, and Scotty exclaimed together.
"Good girl."
They laughed, and Rick explained,
"That's what makes a safe diver. Know what you're going to do before you have to do it."
Jan filled her lungs and dove. The three swam out over her and watched through their masks. She found the mask, and there was a bad moment when she got it on upside down, but she quickly reversed it, held it to her face, and blew it clear. Only then did she bother with the strap that held it. Rick watched, pleased. He hadn't told her it wasn't necessary to attach the mask before clearing. She put the snorkel mouthpiece in place, but did not bother to attach the rubber strap to her head. Then, working smoothly but without wasting time, she slipped on the fins and flashed to the surface. The snorkel emerged and she blew it clear, then swam to the beach.
"That was perfect," Rick applauded.
"You're natural," Scotty added.
Barbie just beamed. Jan was obviously pleased at their praise, but she was a little shy too, so she contented herself with smiling her thanks. Aqualung instruction starts tomorrow morning, Rick said. Come on, I've worked up an appetite. That evening, Rick began work on the radio circuits, as he had promised Barbie. The transmitters would be the easiest part, since he could use the same circuits that had gone into the design of the tractor sort controls, modified only slightly for use on the highest amateur band. Fortunately, Rick had both an operator's and station's licenses as a radio ham, so Barbie's scheme wouldn't mean illegal operation. The girls wandered into the shop where he and Scotty were at work, but there was nothing exciting about the painstaking work of laying out diagrams, so they soon left. Scotty paused in his work of assembling the parts they would need. Rick, how about making transceivers instead of simple transmitters? So we can send and receive on the same unit? We could do that all right, but why? I was just thinking. Quite a few times, we'd have been a lot better off if we could talk back and forth at a distance. There's no reason why these have to be designed just for you and Barbie to use in that mind-reading act. Scotty was right, of course. He usually was. We'll make a pair of transceivers and a receiver for Barbie, unless you think we ought to build a transceiver into her outfit, too. Would that be a lot more work? Not really. We might as well, I suppose. They buckled down to the job. Rick found that he couldn't work long, however. I've still got that guitar string feeling. I'm all tight inside. He didn't like it, and there was no apparent reason for it, but that didn't help him to get rid of it. Scotty knew Rick from long experience. Wish I could help, but I'm stymied. There's nothing we can get our teeth into. Those two scientists bother me. I can't imagine what would put two perfectly sensible and healthy people into a state like Steve described. Same here. Rick had thought about it a number of times in the past day, but had reached no conclusion. But if it's from natural causes, how did Marx and Miller, I mean Morrison, escape? Scotty grinned wryly. You're not asking me because you expect an answer. No, it was rhetorical, Rick agreed. He said abruptly, I've had it. Let's hit the hay. He might have felt better or worse had he been able to tune in on a conversation between Tom Dodd and Steve Ames that was going on at that very moment. We've had 7 men on it ever since this morning, Tom was saying. We checked him from here to breakfast, and the record is absolutely negative. Same for the elevator operator. The barber is a wanderer, never stays in one shop for long. He's hunting another job right now. The machine is his, and it's the only one of its kind. We sent Mike Malone in for a treatment. He says the machine is good. Apparently it's nothing but a hood with 3 massage machines installed on spring mounts so that they fit over the head. The barber applies oil, then turns on the machine. It has dials, but they're fake. It's a massage machine, pure and simple, and it passed the health inspection board, so we know it's not harmful. Steve Ames said thoughtfully, Negative record, huh? Well, at least no one has ever caught up with him if he happens to be a wrong one. It doesn't prove he's clean. Too true. Any ideas? Just keep an eye on him. He's innocent until we get some evidence that he may be guilty. Same for the elevator operator. But for now, we'll consider you've drawn a blank, and let it go at that.